calling for a rapid and radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded. Here's Tom Hartman.
Hello, Tom Hartman fans. As you know, Tom Hartman is one of the hardest working men in talk radio. He does 6 hours every day, and he's taken a couple of days off to not to vacate or relax, but he's on a trip to Germany, and he'll be back with you on Tuesday morning. I'm Peter B. Collins from San Francisco, and I'm hosting the show today and Monday. Delighted to connect with many of you again, some of you for the first time. I want to shout out to my posse at KRXA 540 in Monterey, California, and KGOE 1480 in Eureka, two of Tom Hartman's affiliates that also hear my daily radio program. And I want to shout out to our friends at Sirius Satellite Radio, where I spent 18 months hosting a show on the same channel with Tom Hartman. And wherever you happen to be listening, I'm delighted to talk with you, and I welcome your phone calls here. That's what makes it all work, two-way talk. The number to call is 866-440-TOM, that's 866-440-THOM, or 440-8466, if you prefer. And I've got a bunch of screens open on my computer. I'm looking at the Tom Hartman chat room right now, so you can log on and chat with the people in the room, and I'll be glancing at it every once in a while during the program. That, of course, is at THOM, Hartman with two N's, .com. And just log into the chat room there, and I'll be looking forward to your comments. On the program today, Senator George McGovern, a hero to many of us for his staunch and courageous stands against Nixon and the Vietnam War. He'll be with us in our second hour today. And in the third hour of the Tom Hartman program, Lieutenant Paul Rykoff, an Iraqi war veteran and the founder of Operation Truth, will be joining us. There is so much to talk about as the Republicans deliver tax cuts and torture just in time for Christmas. And, of course, Christmas is under siege, too. The battles are being waged on so many fronts, and the victors, the wealthiest in America. The losers, people who end up named as enemy combatants or detainees of this American government. Are you ready to consider impeachment of Bush and Cheney? Bob Furtick is an activist and a blogger. He blogs at Democrats.com, and he has a new website and a new organization called Impeach Pack. They're on the web at ImpeachPack.org. Hello, Bob. Welcome to the Tom Hartman program today.
Thank you.
It's good to talk to you again.
You too.
Tell me what the reaction has been. It's been about a month since you announced your campaign to push for impeachment, and you're a very practical guy. You're not expecting it to materialize overnight. You realize that we've got to change the Congress in order to get any traction for a potential impeachment process.
Well, that's right. We've got to elect Congress members who support impeachment. It would be, our preference would be to have the present Congress impeach him. In January, we'd love to see somebody introduce articles of impeachment, and we're going to keep working for that, and we're going to keep reaching out to members of Congress who are there now. But there are a number of reasons why the Democrats in Congress who ought to be leading an impeachment battle aren't, and so we are also working with challengers in the upcoming 2006 elections to get them to support impeachment.
And your proposal would be a package deal. We wouldn't just impeach Bush and then get stuck with Cheney for the rest of the term?
Right, because they're joined at the hip. They're inseparable on the crucial issue that is the basis for impeachment, which is the Iraq War. It's as much Cheney's policy, if not more Cheney's policy, than Bush's. So our position is that they both have to be impeached together.
And what kind of reaction have you gotten to the this announcement and to the website you put up?
Well, the grassroots loves it. We've raised $40,000 in small contributions of about $40 each in the first month with practically no publicity at all. We've got a blogger network of several hundred blogs that support this. But when you turn to the mainstream media, of course, the reaction is different. We were written up in Roll Call this week after we endorsed our first candidate, Tony Trupiano, who's was a talk show host in Detroit.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And when he accepted our endorsement and our contribution of $2,100, Roll Call went after him and went after the DCCC, suggesting that Tony was crazy for accepting our money, then that the Democratic Party should ostracize him and disown him for accepting our contribution.
So you really have, in a way, identified a great chasm in the Democratic Party. And that is, there are many of our elected officials who are really unwilling to stand up and face what the grassroots, what the mainstream members of the party consider to be reality.
Yeah, well, we've done some polls. This is another dimension of this, is that we've commissioned polls because the mainstream media, which conducts regular polls and asks a large number of questions, they refuse to ask the question about whether Americans support impeachment. The Zogby poll asked the question first in June and found that 44% of Americans supported impeachment, and John Zogby himself said he was shocked at the results. But he refused to ask the question again, and so we paid Zogby to ask the question again, and then we paid another pollster to do it, and we've got another one in the works. And the support for impeachment in the polls keeps going up. A month ago it was 53% versus 42% that oppose impeachment. So we know the American people support impeachment. The question is why the Democrats that we've elected refuse to talk about impeachment. And that's a complicated question. They met in caucus this week, the House Democrats did, to talk about their position on Iraq because, as you know, they've been battered for not having a unified position. So the one thing they could agree on was that George Bush really screwed up in Iraq. Mm-hmm. That much they can agree on. Well, if they see it that way, then they ought to be talking about how to hold him accountable. And the only way to do that under the Constitution is impeachment.
We're talking with Bob Furtick. ImpeachPact.org is the website if you want to stop in and check it out. I'd like to hear your comments. Are you ready to consider impeachment for Bush and Cheney? 866-440-TOM. 866-440-8466. Put you through here to the Tom Hartman Show. I'm Peter B. Collins. Now, Bob Furtick, as we look at this picture, it strikes me as unusual that Jack Murtha, decorated hero, one of the best friends of the Pentagon, never found a weapon system that he couldn't support, the beneficiary of a great deal of campaign contributions from the military-industrial complex, he's the guy who has stood up and articulated this gap between the elected leadership of the Democratic Party and the rank-and-file members. And what really gets to me is when Democrats like Steny Hoyer, the number two, he's the House whip, number two to Nancy Pelosi, and he's certainly entitled to disagree with Jack Murtha or anybody else, but he does so by using the loaded language of the right. And he says, well, I don't support Jack Murtha's call for a precipitous withdrawal. And that, to me, is just so counterproductive. And you know, if I could speak to Steny Hoyer, I'd say, sir, don't you see the reality of this situation?
Well, I couldn't agree with you more. There are very few Democrats who continue to believe that this war is justified. Howard Dean spoke the truth when he said that the war can't be won. I think the majority of Americans view it that way. We've learned that the reason that George Bush insists on talking about victory is because a political scientist at Duke has this theory that Americans will put up with just about anything as long as Bush keeps talking about victory, regardless of whether we're winning or losing. And so Bush lives in this world of unreality. There aren't many Democrats who participate in that world. Joe Lieberman is another, and I call these people dead-enders. Using Donald Rumsfeld's term, because, you know, we're not going to win any kind of victory that the American people would recognize as a victory. We will be lucky to get out of there without destroying not only Iraq, but also destroying our own military, which is what George Bush has done, which is why John Murtha is speaking up, because he's hearing it from the generals and the colonels that this war is destroying our military from within.
And Bob Furtick, the Republicans aren't going to take this lying down. They see this division in the Democrats, you know, epitomized by Steny Hoyer, Jack Reed of Rhode Island, the senator, and they're now, according to Matt Drudge, planning a white flag campaign. They're going to run some TV commercials with Howard Dean and others and show a white flag indicating surrender. That's going to be a very powerful and additionally divisive message. It'll be very interesting to see how the Democrats respond and if Nancy Pelosi can lead them to close ranks. And secondly, we've got to investigate the source of the white flag material. It could be recycled Klan garments. We'll investigate that. Bob Furtick, thanks for joining us today. Thanks for your work. I want to invite people to visit impeachpac.org and support the effort if you're so inclined. Good luck to you, Bob.
Thank you so much.
Good to talk with you. We'll continue in just a moment and go to your calls here on the Tom Hartmann Program. Sitting in for Tom today, I'm Peter B. Collins.
Fearlessly exploring the truth of the day, here's Tom Hartmann.
Talk, 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 talk. That's what I love to do. Talk radio is what I enjoy. I'm Peter B. Collins, sitting in for Tom Hartmann today. My question of the moment, are you ready to discuss impeachment for Bush and Cheney? It's very interesting. Last July, right at the end of the month, I spent an hour talking with Cindy Sheehan before she went to Crawford, Texas, when she was relatively unknown. And she gave me a bit of a hard time because she suggested impeachment, and I said, oh, Cindy, that's a great idea, and I certainly sympathize with you, but, you know, we've got one-party rule in this country. And the very same people who were able to pull off the misguided impeachment of Bill Clinton do not see that this is a much higher failure of morality and a failure of the constitutional guarantees, the oath of office that these individuals made. And she said, well, Peter, don't give up and don't be limited. Don't think inside that box. And then she went on to make her personal statement to ruin the president's summer vacation, and to really recharge the anti-war movement in this country. And with a guy like Bob Furtick, who is a hardcore activist and a very practical person, leading an impeachment charge that is based around taking back the Congress, well, I can fully support this, because even if we don't achieve that ultimate goal, if we could take back one House of Congress next year, and end one-party rule in Washington, things could get a whole lot better. That's my belief. Let's go to your call. Cheryl in Arcata, you're up first here on the Tom Hartmann Program. Good morning.
Good morning. Nice to have you in for Tom.
Why, thanks.
Just, you know, a thought on the impeachment of Bush. I mean, it seems like this is something that is highly likely that could happen if in fact, we do get the Congress. With all the evidence that we have the Bush administration lying to us, and that's an impeachable offense when you lie to Congress, and we have the evidence of the Downing Street memo, for one thing, and so if that does come to fruition where we do have a Congress back, I mean, I really think that we should impeach him. I mean, this is just something that we should not tolerate. This is a war crime. This is a war against humanity. The world is now a much unsafer place. We've squandered all the wealth, the future wealth of our country, and it's just a horrible crime. I'm just so upset about it myself. And I'm hoping that somebody will get out there and put bumper stickers everywhere that says, "Impeach the son of a Bush." So, Bob,
well, Cheryl, thank you. Thank you for your
there.
Point of view. Thanks for your call. And it's very clear that the Republican talking points are not penetrating Arcata, California. Let's go to Seattle next for Ken. Hi, Ken. You're on the Tom Hartmann Program. This is Peter B.
Peter, I want to impeach them all. I want to impeach the whole administration. Because how deep do you have to go before you get past the corruption?
Well,
you
got to go pretty far down the food chain.
Well, I want them all gone. I want them all gone. I want to put the Democrats in. Give it up. You Republicans have have put us in a fix that is almost maybe irreparable. We may not be able to get out of it. We can't afford this administration another 10 minutes.
We have almost 3 years remaining on the clock. So, all right, I very much appreciate your call, Ken. And we'll take more of your calls after a break coming up here, 866-440-TOM. I like to remember and remind you how we got to where we are.
Weapons, including anthrax and botulism toxins.
Biological and chemical agent to kill millions of people.
Chemical weapons, including VX and sarin, mustard gas.
To a massive and sudden horror.
Massive death and destruction.
Death on a massive scale.
Yes, those are the lies we were told. I just got a cue. We've got time for one more call. Virginia from Tacoma, Washington. You're next here on the Tom Hartman Program. Hi, Virginia. I think we got Virginia there. Hi, Virginia. Okay, Virginia is on the line, but not... Oh, we got dial tone back there. Let's go to Dave in Seattle. Hello, Dave. You're on the Tom Hartman Program.
Hi, I'm just... it's just a comment on Democrats and how frustrating the current situation is, because Republicans went after, you know, Clinton back in the 90s when he had soaring approval ratings, and now Democrats can't even seem to find a unified voice over whether or not to even consider it. So it's just a frustrating observation about the current climate.
Well, you're right about that, Dave, and Jack Murtha has provided cover for all kinds of Democrats. I mean, he is as conservative as you can find in the Democratic Party, and as hawkish as you can find, particularly on military issues. And, you know, for people to fail to see that he is providing them with that kind of political protection that permits them to speak up and really take a strong position strikes me as very out of touch with the reality of the Democratic Party and the reality of the polls that show that even many Republicans now understand that this war was based on lies and is you know, ill-begotten and has to be ended. I thank you for the call from Seattle. We're going to continue right after the break, and I'd like to hear from you. Are you ready for the impeachment of George W. Bush, Dick Cheney, maybe a few more down the power command chain there? Give us a call, 866-440-TOM. That's 866-440-8466. I'm Peter B. Collins, sitting in for Tom Hartman today.
Bringing democracy to the United States of America, here's Tom Hartman.
Just take what you need. Don't empty out this one. Just take what you need. Cause I ain't got much hope.
Yeah, give him enough rope. I'm Peter B. Collins, sitting in for Tom Hartman. He took a couple of days off. Don't worry, he's not at Club Med anywhere. I think he's giving a talk in Europe. He'll be back with you on Tuesday here. I'm here today, Friday, and Monday as well. And I'm glad you're listening wherever you happen to be. You can join us on the toll-free line, 866-440-8466. That's 866-440-TOM. And it puts you right through to our switchboard here. Lots of calls, and we'll get right back to him in just a moment. As you know, Condoleezza Rice is on what I call the Rice-a-Palooza torture tour of Europe. And every day, in a different location, she gives a speech denying that the United States has used torture, condones torture, denying that we have transported individuals from one location to another for the purpose of torture, denying that we have used this rendition process to send suspects to nations where we expect they'll get harsher treatment than we might deliver ourselves. And every day, she utters these denials, and another story surfaces. First up, the Italians said they're prepared to indict 20 American CIA agents for a kidnap and rendition that took place in Italy. Then in Germany, a man surfaced with a name strikingly similar to a guy on the terrorist watch list. They detained him for months, they took him to Afghanistan, they tortured him, and they finally dropped him off on a dirt road in the middle of the night in Macedonia without even an apology. And today, the lead story in the New York Times, The Bush administration based a crucial pre-war assertion about ties between Iraq and al-Qaeda on detailed statements made by a prisoner who coughed them up while in Egyptian custody and later said he had fabricated them to escape harsh treatment. This is Al Libby, not to be confused with Scooter Libby. He is Ibn al-Sheikh Al Libby. And he provided his most specific and elaborate accounts about ties between Iraq and al-Qaeda only after he was secretly handed over to Egypt by the United States. Now, on my radio program earlier this week, I interviewed a distinguished American serviceman, a retired Navy fighter pilot, Philip Butler. He spent 8 years at the Hanoi Hilton. He got there before McCain. And Philip Butler told us the story that when they tortured him enough, he finally wrote and signed a confession. And in the confession, he fabricated everything, but it was just delivered in a realistic way, except for one detail. At the very end of this admission, he said, "We did this bombing of, you know, innocent civilians in North Vietnam on the orders of our commander, Dick Tracy." Now, the North Vietnamese didn't know about Dick Tracy. They didn't realize their proverbial leg was being pulled. But as Philip Butler told me, you don't get anything when you torture people. This is a false premise based on Hollywood dramas, not on real-world reality. Back to your calls now, and Dave is on the line from Eureka. Whenever I do a talk show, I can count on Dave to be there. And I'm one of those guys who I'm a little bit quirky. If you call this program and thank me for taking your call, I'm going to go ballistic because I am grateful to you for calling. And I know many of you spend 20, 30 minutes on hold to get on the program for just a few minutes. So please don't ever thank me. Allow me to thank you, starting with Dave in Humboldt. Hi, Dave.
Yes, I'm a big fan of yours, Peter. But, yes, I am ready, very much ready, not only impeachment but imprisonment. The way I look at it, you know, I'm sure, is that it is a mistake to think of this war as a mistake. It was planned out by serious criminal psychopaths who stole their offices by rigging elections. They got themselves in with a plan of shifting wealth as much as possible from working people to this small cartel at the top. And that's what they're doing.
And they haven't given up on that, Dave. The transfer of wealth continues with the extension of the tax cuts, particularly the capital gains tax cuts. And this is such reckless work on the part of the Republicans, who used to consider themselves the party of fiscal restraint, fiscal conservatism.
We need to impeach this whole con faction that is in there. You can't just go down to number 10 is going to be an honest person. They are very much a planned group doing what they're doing. And this war is very, very profitable to them. That's why we're there. That's why they have no plan of leaving. And they don't care how many people get harmed in the process.
Now, Dave, I certainly embrace your sentiments. I don't disagree really with anything you said. Now we've got to roll up our sleeves, and I wore a shirt that doesn't even have a button on one of my cuffs to make it easier today. But we've got to roll up our sleeves because the midterm elections are next November, less than a year away. And we need to work at the grassroots level to make sure that those who enter the primary for the House of Representatives and for the one-third of the Senate seats that are up for grabs next year, we have to make sure that some progressive candidates who share our views will make it through the process. And it may mean some uncomfortable decisions. We may have to unload some long-term Democrats who simply don't get it on the war in Iraq. And the big problem that I see on the left is that we're just too damn nice and we're too damn tolerant. And people will say, well, my congressperson hasn't come out against the war yet, but he or she is good on so many other issues. And I really think that we need to be disciplined. We need to be hard-nosed. We need to be cold-blooded, reptilian. And we have to deliver the message to every Democrat. If you want to be reelected, you've got to really realize that this war is wrong and that your constituents know it. And if you maintain even moderate positions supporting the Bush administration, you may lose your seat next year. That's the only thing they respond to, and we've got to play hardball on this.
They're going to hang on to power everywhere they can, and they're going to get every vote that Debo can deliver, and that is something you have to target every damn day. They've got to get some honest means of voting.
You have to overcome the margin of graft, and that isn't easy, especially when you look at what happened in Ohio in November of 2005. Dave, thanks for your call today. Let's go to Colleen in Coos Bay, Oregon. Colleen, welcome to the Tom Hartman Program. This is Peter B.
Hi, nice talking to you.
Thank you.
I'm calling Tom, and you're doing great. And I totally agree with everything your previous caller just said. I believe that we will impeach Bush and the rest of them. Mainly, you know, everybody every day is waking up to how wrong this war is. And I wanted to tell you, when you were talking about the bumper stickers to impeach Bush, my daughter here in Coos Bay, I am so proud of her. She's a young working mother, single mother, and she organized a peace rally on September 11th, and we're part of another group that we protest the second Saturday of every month, which is tomorrow, against the war on the boardwalk in Coos Bay. And she drives around town. She has a little sports utility, and on her back, three big windows in white paint. On the back, it says, the big one is impeach Bush. On the sides, it says, if the people will lead, the leaders will follow. And the other side says, if we kill the innocent, we become the enemy. So I wish she pulled up without her car. I thought, oh, my gosh, don't go over the speed limit. But it
yeah.
Felt like this positive. I think she's had one person try and scratch off the bush and it's back on there.
Well, she's very courageous. As you know,
yeah.
a college instructor in Kansas was taken out and beaten after he announced he was going to offer a course essentially debunking creationism and intelligent design. And those are people, we have to presume, if they were offended by his position, who felt that somehow God or a higher power had directed them to beat the crap out of this guy because he was offering a position that they didn't agree with on a religious basis. It's scary.
I'm
proud of your daughter, Colleen, that she has the courage of her convictions and is willing to display them right there on the vehicle.
Yep,
thanks for checking in today. Let's go to William, Belleville, Washington. You're next here on the Tom Hartman Program. Hi, William. Let's see if we can punch up William. All right, William, are you there? We're talking to William in Belleville, Washington.
For the first time, this is my happy day. I'm hearing the words impeachment. Let's build a fire under these Democrats. Let's let them know that they're not going to get reelected if they don't support our beliefs. End this war. Get these boys home. This is a senseless war. Let's get this Democratic Party moving. Let's build a fire under them.
William, let me ask you this.
And I agree everything that the previous callers have said.
All right. I appreciate that. William, I have a question for you. A rumor floated over the last couple of days that Donald Rumsfeld is ready to resign as Secretary of Defense. He denied it on the Lehrer News Hour last night on PBS. But the second rumor that was floated was that Senator Joe Lieberman, nominally a Democrat, he's from Connecticut, might be named to replace Rumsfeld as Secretary of Defense. What do you think about that?
I don't think that's a good situation for either one of them. Get rid of them by all.
Well, to me, Joe Lieberman, and I, you know, think he's a nice man, and I think that some of his positions are sustainable, but he has supported the Republicans, and just last week, the president cited a quote from Joe Lieberman basically chastising the Democrats not to be, you know, stirring the pot and discussing these issues at a time of war. And I think that that's unpatriotic on the part of Joe Lieberman. And it's sad to see the president utilize those remarks in an attempt to manipulate the American people and divide the Democratic Party. I want to hear from you about this. Give me a call right now, 866-440-TOM. This is the Tom Hartman Program. I'm Peter B.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Working hard to make
It's the Tom Hartman Program. Tom has the day off. I am your humble host, Peter B. Collins, substituting for Tom. And as we hear music about hard-working Americans, I just want to pause for a moment to acknowledge that I am an endangered species. I'm a member of an endangered species. And no, I'm not talking about the minority political party. I'm talking about my membership in a labor union. For over 30 years, I've been a proud member of the American Federation of Television and Radio Artists, and we are affiliated with the AFL-CIO. And we are an endangered species because if you factor out public sector employees, labor unions today represent only 7.9% of the labor force in these United States. And this weekend, there will be 100 demonstrations nationwide, sponsored by the AFL-CIO, as part of International Human Rights Week. And people are going to take to the streets to send a message that unionization is a good thing and that it is a basic human right. And that's something I staunchly support. And so if you are a member of labor, or you wish you were, or you want to support the efforts of working people in this country, I hope you will join those demonstrations this weekend. Lots of callers on the line, and let's see who's been waiting the longest. Raymond in Cement City, Michigan. Welcome to the Tom Hartman Program. This is Peter B.
Yeah, good afternoon. It's good to talk to you. I used to listen to you on Sirius in the evenings, but
thank you, Raymond. I'm glad to hear that.
Well, listen, I wanted to pass on two points. One is that I like everybody else, agree that this ridiculous war over there has got to be cleaned up. But I think that my view is that the position that Wes Clark presented in his op-ed piece, and I know I've listened to some of the discussions on this, of how to deal with that situation over there, gives us probably the best way out of this situation that I've seen.
Mm-hmm.
Number two is I don't think we can really get anywhere until we make the first criteria for electing congressmen a commitment to open and real congressional investigations into not only this war, but all this other crap that's been going on.
Well, amen to that, Raymond. I certainly agree. We need to have a two-party system. When the Democrats controlled all three houses, some bad things happened. And worse things have happened under one-party rule, GOP style. And we have to recognize that the founders really had the right idea, that there should be this dynamic tension between the two political parties. They didn't know about Democrats and Republicans, of course, but the framework that they set up, really needs the interplay of a strong opposition, and, you know, we never want to have the majority have absolute power. And that is where we're seeing these abuses stem from today. Now, to your original point about getting out of Iraq, I have a couple of things to tell you. First of all, I believe that the United States must first and foremost admit that we screwed up, that we were wrong, not necessarily to take out Saddam. I think that's an arguable point. But to invade and occupy the country was not necessary, was not, called for, and we trumped up the rationales and shifted them over time, trying to find one that would really connect with people, and we have yet to do so.
That's exactly
and secondly,
right.
the people on the ground, whatever faction you want to look at, they know that we are not there for the long term. We're going to leave eventually. So this idea that setting a timetable is somehow dangerous is just a phony argument. They know we are leaving.
But
we've got to recognize that, and if we admit that we screwed up on the way in, there's a greater chance that NATO, the United Nations, and other former allies might help us out of this pickle.
And I think that's the point of the strategy that Wes Clark was trying to get. You've got to get the neighbors in the region to get involved because they all have an interest in a piece of that country. You have the Turks, they have their interest with the Kurds. You have the Assyrians have an interest with the Baathists and the Sunnis, and you have Iran who have an interest with the Shiites. And where it's at right now, the Iran is really coming out ahead
You're exactly right. And Raymond, Joe Wilson gave a speech the other night that I attended. It was fascinating, and he made a very similar point. Thanks for your call. I want to jump to one more before we run out of time this hour. Larry, in Olympia, Washington, you're on the Tom Hartman program.
Hey, Peter. Are you the same Peter that used to work Seattle radio?
I never worked at local stations in Seattle.
Oh, okay. I guess it was another Peter B. At any rate, my comment was Joe Lieberman. To me, he's nothing more than Zell Miller Light. In other words, he doesn't come off with all the viciousness and the name-calling and
right.
the silly little colloquialisms and the hollering and screaming.
And he never offered to beat up Chris Matthews.
Yeah. But the message is the same. In other words, if you don't follow lockstep, goose step maybe is the better word for it, that, you know, you're doing something wrong. And our country was founded upon the discourse. The whole premise that we can and will continue to criticize our government when we feel that they're wrong. That's what we're all about.
All right, Larry, I'm out of time for the hour. You made a great point there, and I'm still waiting to see the payoff for Zell Miller for his support for George W. Bush. He didn't get an ambassadorship. There must be something waiting for him. Thanks for all your calls, and thanks for listening to this hour of the Tom Hartman program. Coming up next, we'll talk with former Senator George McGovern. I'm Peter B. Collins.
Been listening to the Tom Hartman program? Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information. Covers corporate lies, exposes political corruption, and has a clear vision of what America could become. Here's Tom Hartman.
And I'd like to be just like him. Tom Hartman has the day off, Monday as well, and I'll be here both days. I am Peter B. Collins, originating in San Francisco, and delighted to be on the Tom Hartman program coast to coast. Our toll-free number, 866-440-TOM. That's 866-440-THOM or 8466, as you prefer. Coming up next hour, we'll be joined by Lieutenant Paul Rykoff. He's the founder of Operation Truth. He is an Iraqi war veteran, and he does a great job of articulating the issues about the war in Iraq from the point of view of the men and women who have been doing the dirty work for the Bush administration. That's coming up next hour. Right now, I'm honored to be joined by former Senator George McGovern, the Democrat from South Dakota, who was our standard bearer in 1972. He grew up in South Dakota, mostly in Mitchell, home of the Corn Palace. He got his PhD in history from Northwestern University, where I also spent some time. And he went on to serve in Congress and then in the United States Senate. And as I mentioned, he led the Democratic ticket against Richard Nixon in 1972. Senator, welcome to the Tom Hartman program.
Well, thank you. It's nice to be your guest.
Well, it's a real pleasure to talk with you, sir. And one of the things that we wanted to mention is the film that is making the rounds across America today, which is called One Bright Shining Moment, subtitled The Forgotten Summer of George McGovern. And it's now playing in Grand Rapids, Michigan at the Wealthy Theater. That's an interesting name. And it will be screening in Chicago at the Siskel Film Center January 15th and 18th, just after the first of the year. Senator, give us a quick sketch of this film and whether or not you believe it accurately portrays your tumultuous summer there at the convention and leading up to the election that you lost in 1972.
Well, the film was produced and directed by a brilliant young Hollywood filmmaker, Steve Vittoria. He talked to me about it a couple of years ago, and I was impressed with him then as I am now, so I encouraged him to go ahead with it. It concentrates entirely on the 1972 campaign, the bid for the nomination which was successful. I won 11 primaries, including the two biggest ones, New York and California, captured the Democratic nomination in a field of 17 contenders, but then lost heavily to Richard Nixon in the general election. And that's really the story of the film.
Mm-hmm. And, sir, I wonder if you would make some parallels to our current situation, because in the view of many Americans, you know, you were a decorated World War II veteran. You were not a peacenik or a pacifist. And when you and others, Pete McCloskey on the Republican side of the aisle, came out, I'm also thinking of the senator from Indiana. I can't think of his name right now. He died just a few years ago. But he really challenged his party orthodoxy and came out in opposition to the war. That wasn't easy to do. And when you saw Congressman Jack Murtha make his courageous stand just before Thanksgiving, did it bring back memories of your crusade?
It absolutely did. You know, there's an interesting paradox. Many times people who have had no experience whatsoever with the battlefield and with the tragedy of war, what General Sherman described as the hell of war, they become the biggest hawks. I think it's partly because they know that somebody else is going to do the fighting, and all they have to do is sit back in their rocking chairs, safe at home, and supposedly cheer on the troops. I found that same situation existed during the Vietnam War. Frequently, when I'd be on the floor of the Senate warning against our deepening involvement in Vietnam, somebody would get up on the across the aisle and make a bombastic speech saying, "We have to support our troops. We have to stand with our troops." Well, that's easy to say in an air-conditioned, paneled room in Washington, D.C., where you don't have to worry about the tragedy of warfare. And I was always tempted to introduce a measure that before people vote for a war, they have to be willing themselves to volunteer for service in that war. Congressman Murtha, who is a war hero, who spent most of his adult life in the Marine Corps, who is closely connected to people in the Pentagon, and who initially supported this war in Iraq, now says the war can't be won, that we've done whatever we could do over there. We've toppled Saddam Hussein, and we ought to begin withdrawing. And I think he's absolutely right. But he's being assailed as being soft on defense and soft on the war effort and running out on our troops, which, of course, is a lot of nonsense.
George McGovern with us here on the Tom Hartman program today. Senator, you voted for the Gulf of Tonkin resolution, as Jack Murtha voted for the authorization for this president to go into Iraq.
Yeah.
Did you feel that there was kind of a similar process here where, you know, this kind of a phony intelligence was provided, a provocation that turned out not to be as sinister as it was described, and then, of course, the march to war, and often there is no opportunity to look back.
Yes.
But we've seen now Senator Edwards come out and say flatly that he was misled and that he regrets his vote. Do you think that all of the senators will reach that position sooner or later?
Absolutely. As a matter of fact, I think even the administration will probably start pulling troops out of there in the next 6 to 10 months. I don't think they're going to go into the 2006 elections with this disastrously mistaken war hanging over their heads. So just as Nixon finally began pulling out forces before the 72 election, I think you'll see that happen here. Congressman Murtha, by the way, has predicted that too. Let me tell you one difference between the Gulf of Tonkin resolution and this war resolution. When the Gulf of Tonkin resolution came up, we had already been at war in Vietnam for several years.
That's right.
And I had opposed it during those several years. The Gulf of Tonkin centered on one incident, two American destroyers that were allegedly attacked on the high seas in an unprovoked fashion. And under those circumstances, I think it was quite logical that just about everybody in the Congress would support President Johnson's retaliatory move. We later learned, however, that there was no attack on those destroyers, and if there had been, it certainly wouldn't have been unprovoked, because we learned that those destroyers were up there harassing the North Vietnamese coastline. So that was a complete fraud. This war resolution this time came before we attacked Iraq, before we invaded. So it's quite different from the Gulf of Tonkin incident. Nonetheless, I have said, and I repeat it in this film, that I regret my vote in favor of the Gulf of Tonkin resolution. Obviously, we were misled there.
Senator McGovern, what is your sense of the MIRTHA proposal to withdraw troops over the horizon, maintain the flexibility to use airstrikes as needed? It's kind of a plan that I guess I have a few problems with, because it's not a full withdrawal, and it doesn't necessarily mean that the U.S. will be out of combat in the Iraqi theater soon.
Well, I have a great respect for Congressman Murthy, and I admire his common sense and his courage in calling for our disengagement in Iraq. But I personally think we should come home and not put our troops in neighboring countries. The problem with putting American forces into Kuwait after they come out of Iraq or some other neighboring country is that you're just going to invite an insurgency to take place there. Mm-hmm. These insurgents are mostly Iraqis, but there are also some that have come in there from other countries. And I think the same thing would happen if we attempted to occupy another neighboring Arab country. So I'd prefer a clean break in which we systematically reduce our forces. Mm-hmm. We can do it in stages. It doesn't have to be done in one swoop, just the way it was done in Vietnam, where we just disengaged and eventually had all of our troops out of there, and that's what we ought to do in Iraq.
Yes, sir. Well, Senator McGovern, thank you very much for joining us today. Thank you for your courageous work over the years. You've been an inspiration for me and many Americans.
Well, thank you for having me on your program.
My pleasure. One bright, shining moment, the forgotten summer of George McGovern, is playing in Grand Rapids tonight at the Wealthy Theater, Chicago, January 15 and 18 at the Siskel Film Center. You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. We'll continue in just a moment. I'm Peter B. Collins.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Coast to coast, it's the Tom Hartman Program. I love it when the Staple Singers come up on the musical jukebox here on the Hartman Program. I used to do a radio show in Chicago when I was a young man, and Pop Staples was alive at the time and used to call in, but never before 3 a.m. and was a great character. Got to meet the family and enjoyed them over the years. Loved their music. It's Peter B. Collins sitting in for Tom Hartman today on The Hartman Show. 866-440-8466 is our toll-free number. And joining us now from Talk Radio News is Victoria Jones. Hi, Victoria.
Hi, how are you?
I'm fine. Lots of stuff going on inside the Beltway these days. How do you decide every morning what you're going to cover?
It's a good question. We look at it from the point of view of not only what is big news, but also from the point of view of what the people we work for, which is talk radio stations, about 500 of them around the country. And of course, you're the single most important people that we, you know, that we report to. But we look at it from the point of view of what is a talk radio issue.
Mm-hmm.
So if there aren't a lot of issues, we'll send people to cover those, or that's what I'll be talking about. But if there's something that's a real talk radio issue, then that's the one we want to make sure that we cover. And as somebody who's been a talk show host for years and years and years, I usually know what that is. I get
Right. Got a
fairly good sense of that.
What's going on these days? Are we still battling over the siege of Christmas?
We're still battling over that, yes, and Les Kinsolving, who's a talk show host with WBAL, who's also has his White House press credentials, he's been, Les is eccentric, he's been bringing it up every single day at the press briefing, not so much from the point of view of what most people are bringing it up, but from the point of view of the president, when at the lighting of the Christmas tree, made a speech about holiday cheer and about uplifting and hope and all this kind of thing, and then said the person who brings it to us is Santa. And so Les has been upset all week about him. Is he comparing Christ to Santa?
Mm-hmm.
And so this has gone backwards and forwards with Scott McClellan. And basically, Scott McClellan's point is, no, Santa was there. Santa was standing there. He's referring to Santa. So then Les had asked a question, so then Scott sends him an email. So the following day, Les's question is, he purports to know whether the email actually was from Scott. And Scott said, well, you know, maybe an elf sent it, which is hilarious for Scott because he never makes a joke.
Mm-hmm.
And then basically Les does accept that the reference was to Santa, that the reference was not to Christ. But the holiday greeting card, you know, and the invitation that we have to the White House Christmas party is called, I'm just looking at it here, a holiday reception. That upset him too.
I can't believe that the White House didn't get the message about the siege of Christmas. Jerry Falwell can't get through?
You'd think he would have a permanent line open, wouldn't you?
Well, it's 456-1414.
There you go.
What else is going on, Victoria?
Well, the big story really is that the Patriot Act seems to have got some kind of compromise worked out on it. They're going to come back and vote on this next week, the House and the Senate, and these are the most controversial provisions. What they've done, basically, and the White House was involved in this and apparently likes this deal, they're going to keep the provisions that people are worried about for 4 years. There had been a plan to keep them for 8 to 10 years, so that's not going to happen. However, as you know, this has made it easier for people to get library records, tap phones secretly, mm-hmm. and search offices without telling you. Well, the problem is that even though they have this agreement, there are no Democratic negotiators, either in the House or the Senate, who embrace the bill. And a bipartisan group of senators, 3 Democrats and 3 Republicans, have basically said that it doesn't do enough to protect civil liberties of innocent Americans. And Senator Russ Feingold has said that he might filibuster. So all this excitement next week.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's going to be interesting to see. Of course, they wanted to put some ornaments on the holiday or Christmas tree, your call. So they are jamming through the extension of the tax cuts. And it is fascinating that the amounts come very close to matching the offsets that they took back from Medicaid recipients, student loans, the deadbeat dad collection system, and many other programs that are important to average Americans.
Surely that's a coincidence.
Oh, Victoria, you have to access your cynicism software. And is there anything else? How about Congressman Bob Ney? It looks like things are getting hotter for him in the Abramoff investigation.
Yeah, it does look as though things are getting hotter for him in the Abramoff investigation. Now, friends of his, and he's a popular guy and has a lot of loyalty even with people in the media, friends of his say ultimately he's not going to get into trouble about this. Anything that he did was done inadvertently. But I don't know. I mean, you know, now that we're hearing that that he is being very seriously investigated, you know, with regard to this, I'm not sure he's going to escape. I'm not sure he's going to escape at all.
And, Victoria, do you get the sense that electeds and staffers are being more careful about accepting gifts from lobbyists this holiday season?
Oh, I think so. I think so. I mean, if they're not being, they will be. You know, it's gifts, it's travel. It is the culture of corruption, as it was referred to. But the thing is that it's not, you know, it is on both sides of the aisle. It is on both sides of the aisle. Now, when it comes to Ney again, apparently prosecutors are going after him, possibly for bribery, which is, you know, over official acts that benefited clients of Abramoff. So.
Well, it is on both sides of the aisle a little, but because the power of one-party rule is on the Republican side, anybody who's lobbying or bribing probably was targeting Republicans.
And
Victoria Jones from Talk Radio News,
you.
Thanks for joining us today on the Tom Hartman program. We'll continue in just a moment. You can call us 866-440-8466. I'm Peter B.
This is the Democracy Zone with Tom Hartman.
Let's get it started. Ha! Let's get it started in here. Let's get it started. Ha! Let's get it started in here. Let's get it started. Ha! Let's get it started in here.
It's the Tom Hartman program, coast to coast, on this Friday. I'm Peter B. Collins from sunny San Francisco, sitting in on the Hartman Show today. Lines available for you at 866-440-8466. And like Tom, I take calls from anyone, from any point of view, any place in America, and any subject that you want to talk about. I'm not shy, and if I don't know about something, I'll just flat up admit it. But I love to talk about issues in the news. I follow politics the way other people follow sports. And so if there's something you want to talk about that we haven't brought up, use your First Amendment rights while they're still in full effect. Again, the number 866-440-TOM, T-H-O-M, 866-440-8466. Back to your calls in just a second. But first, I want to say right on to Michael Schiavo. He endured so much critical and judgmental commentary from the right-wing nuts earlier this year as he dealt with the very difficult and delicate end-of-life issues for his wife, Terry. And after, I think, an appropriate time of quiet, Michael Schiavo is fighting back. He has formed Terry Pack to support or oppose candidates depending on where they stood on the Schiavo case. And Terry Pack has named the first campaign they're going to get involved with, if it occurs. And it would be the 2006 re-election attempt of the congressman from Sugar Land, Texas, the former pest control expert, Tom DeLay. He's the only politician so far targeted on the website of Terry Pack, and I think it is totally fitting. And I put a little caveat in there because it's possible that Tom DeLay will not still be in office next November. Wishful thinking on my part, because he's certainly a tenacious goon who's going to hang on by any thread that he can. But I believe that Ronnie Earl's investigation in Texas is just the first phase of the legal problems that Tom DeLay will encounter in 2006. Can you say Jack Abramoff? I'm sure that's what the DeLay defense team is preparing for right now. All right, let's get back to your calls. And Kevin in Dallas has been holding the longest. Kevin, I feel a little bad. I hate it when you have to stay on hold so long, but I'm glad you did. And you're on the air here on the Tom Hartman Show.
Oh, how are you doing, Mr. Collins?
I'm fine. Did I have to wake you up?
I was just listening. I hope they nail DeLay's rear end to the, you know, so-and-so. But this Christmas stuff, that's just smokescreen. They're just blowing smoke up people's rear end to cover all the other missteps and screw-ups that they're doing in all the war and so forth. But what I want to ask about, okay, if the Democrats win the midterm elections, first, do you think they have enough, fallopian tubes or balls to actually go through with the impeachment proceedings and also try them on treason? President, Vice President.
Well, I would answer it this way right now, Kevin. As the membership of the Democratic caucus in the House is currently comprised, probably not. They need some new blood. They need some fighting Democrats. They need people like Paul Hackett, who's running for the Senate from Ohio. They need people who are going to go in there and say, look, the jig is up. The people, and Jack Murtha has said this very clearly. The Democratic membership, the rank and file, is way ahead of its elected leaders on these issues. You still there? Okay, he's moved on. Thank you very much for the call from Texas. Thanks for holding on there. Next, we go to Bill in Sahamish, Washington. Welcome to the program, Bill. Hi, Bill. We're talking to you now. I'll turn your radio down. I can even hear myself there. Hi, Bill. All right. Do we have Bill?
Hello?
Let's see. There, we got you now, Bill. Sorry, we had picked up the wrong line. It wasn't your fault.
Oh, okay, great. Thanks. Yeah, I wanted to just say my wife and I live in a very conservative part of Seattle, and we're totally for impeachment. We have bumpers. We've had bumper stickers on our cars for months, and we get rude gestures once in a while, but otherwise we stick to our guns. But I think the one of the big problems, as everybody knows, is the mainstream media. I mean, you have guys like Matthews saying that everybody thinks everybody likes Bush, and it's only the whack jobs on the left that don't like him. And people hear that, they're going to believe it because they think that he's representing the majority view of the country. And I think that's also why a lot of the Democrats are maybe afraid to speak out, which I wish they wouldn't do that. But Howard Dean came out and said that we couldn't win the war in Iraq, and got excoriated on all the news programs.
Well, and the next step, according to Matt,
the same
Bill
thing.
Bill, the next step, according to Matt Drudge, is the Republicans are going to use a white flag image and link it to the Democrats like Murtha and Dean, who have spoken the truth.
Yeah.
And they're going to try to paint them as cowards, as people who, want to retreat and who want to give up. And this is the kind of phony message, the false patriotism that is really endemic in the Bush administration. And we need to push back on this. We cannot take it sitting down.
Yeah.
And even though I have differences with Jack Murtha about his support of Star Wars missile defense, about his unquestioning support of the Pentagon at almost every turn over the last 20, 30 years he's been in the House, I will stand up and speak on his behalf for the courage that he has shown to speak the truth on the war in Iraq.
Yeah, well, and it's been going on a long time. I'm sure you've read The Right-Wing Noise Machine by David Brock.
Sure have.
I think everybody should read that to understand this garbage that is being filtered through the mainstream media from the right wingers. So it's appalling. But.
Well, Bill, you're right that the media has been very poor, particularly the mainstream electronic corporate media. They're more interested in following the loss of Natalie Holloway in Aruba,
oh, yeah,
the latest hijinks of Paris Hilton.
Well,
and
this whole holiday thing.
That's just such a waste of time and a diversion. Of course, it sends coded messages to the people they were trying to send coded messages about Harriet Myers to.
Yeah.
And so, it is all part of a package, and the media is complicit in the problems we have today. Thanks a lot for your call. Next, I want to go to Bennington, Vermont. Ronald's on the line, and the Green Mountain State is the home of my ancestors. Ronald, welcome to the program today.
Hi, how are you?
Great.
You're doing a good job.
Why, thank you. It's what I love to do.
Thanks. I thought to see, I offered the Republicans out in 2006, but I just kind of worthy of getting Democrats like Dylan Hillary Clinton, Joe Lieberman, Sal Miller, that's so much like the Republicans.
Well, I think that we have to be very clear about that. And on a regular basis, I talk about Hillary Rodham Clinton. I am not prepared to accept the idea that she is the anointed standard bearer for 2008 for the Democratic Party. There are a lot of problems that she has, not the least of which is her position on Iraq. And she's now trying to straddle the ground between Bush and Murtha, saying that, she wants to see movement toward a drawdown in 2006, but she is not willing, A, to say that Bush et al. Lied us into this war. She goes namby-pamby and says, maybe the intelligence was wrong. And she does not admit their failures in managing the occupation.
Right. I would like to see a candidate like Nancy Pelosi or John Edwards for president.
All right.
But another thing I wanted to speak with you about is, have you heard about what was passed to take out for past student loans to take from people who's disabled and elderly?
Yeah, a Supreme Court decision the other day written by Sandra Day O'Connor said that they can garnish your Social Security check to pay back student loans.
Isn't that kind of harsh? I mean, I'm all for people being responsible, but I mean people that's
Ronald,
disabled.
Ronald, come on and get real. It's Christmas time.
Right.
This is the ghost of Charles Dickens speaking through the United States Supreme Court. I think the next step should be, after we garnish their wages, let's lock them up in a debtor's prison.
I think that's what people like our current president, George Bush, would like.
Are in a scary Darwinian era. You're absolutely right.
And the media is absolutely, the corporate media, I mean, you get like so little truth. I watch Democracy Now and I listen to Tom Hartman and like that, but the corporate media is not very much different than Fox News.
You're correct. The graphics are different and the music is a little different.
Right. I mean, there may be a little more hidden their messages, but they basically give the same message as Bill O'Reilly.
Thanks a lot, Ronald. Nice to hear from you in the Green Mountain State today. We're going to take a break here on the Tom Hartman Show and return for more of your phone calls. The line is open at 866-440-8466. That's 866-440-TOM. And we're logged on to the chat room, too, at tomhartman.com. If you want to make a comment, you can drop in there and share it with me and the other people who are in the chat room right now. Coming up next hour, Lieutenant Paul Rykoff joins us here on the Tom Hartman Program.
Fearlessly exploring the truth of the day, here's Tom Hartman.
As soon as you're born, they make you feel small by giving you no time instead of it all. Till the pain is so big you feel nothing at all.
It's the Tom Hartman Program, Coast to Coast. I'm sitting in for Tom today, Peter B. Collins, and you can join us on the phone at 866-440-8466. Dave in New Albany, Indiana, thanks for holding on. You're next here.
I was just listening to the program since the beginning, and all of the subjects seem to come, there seems to be an attitude being expressed that the next election is going to give us control in the House and all the rest of this. And I'm saying, and my point is that I'm 71 years old and I've been a citizen of this country all that time, and I've seen this thing repeated and repeated and repeated. The New York Times and the right wing that we see now in my younger years, they were the John Birch Society and all the remnants of that. And the problems
Dave, yeah. You also had Klan, active Klan groups there in Indiana.
Well, I wasn't living here in those days, but you're right. That's true. But my point is this, though, that with the money situation the way it is, the control of the corporate media, and the fact that we've got a two-party system that is more often than not tied up, and they can't, for instance, now we could go a month without any action in the House because of political stances on one issue or the other. The two-party system, as far as I'm concerned, is not working in this country. And what we ought to be looking at is a system that's been used in Western democracies in Western Europe for a long time, and that's the proportional representation system. And I've been trying to get attitudes on this and getting good information. The two objections that I hear are that it would take a constitutional amendment to do it, and then the other is that the incumbents wouldn't go for a three-party system or a multi-party system or a proportional representation system, because then their tenure in office is jeopardized by the fact that they're, you know, it's not going to be so easy to buy them off.
Dave, I share your view that the two-party system is not ideal for America, and I would love to see a third party develop traction. I have worked with many members of the Green Party on the local level, and one of the things that I've encouraged Green Party members to think about is trying to win 3 to 5 seats in Congress, in the House of Representatives, because there they could become a pivotal coalition that both sides would need to go to in a, you know, a tightly divided House to you know, push legislation through. And that would give a third party the most traction that I can see. The other thing that I support is called instant runoff voting. And that's where, in a primary, a member of a third party has an opportunity to best the members of the two major parties in the event that it's a tie between the two leaders. Then your second choice vote gets recorded. You don't have to have a second runoff type election, and it does permit people to say, well, if my first choice doesn't get elected, who would my second choice out of these candidates be? And
okay,
I think that is a way to try to loosen the grip of the two major parties. The other factor that Ross Perot and other independent presidential candidates have encountered is that the regulations in various states for qualifying for the ballot as a presidential candidate are very steep. And in some places like New York State, it's extremely difficult for an independent to get on the ballot. And I would like to see those things changed, but it will require initiatives because, as you pointed out, the incumbents of the two major parties will not change the rules of this game.
And one other thing, too, and again, it's my cynicism, I think, that's propelling this, but the big thing that I'm worried about, and it keeps rearing its ugly head in my experience, is the fact that the situation in Ohio where the voting machines dictated who the in fact, in the last election, I'm more convinced than ever that, again, that election was stolen because of the situation in voting machines. And we're looking at the so-called,
Well, I'm going to stop you there because I've got to take some other calls here, sir. But we will be talking about Ohio voter issues on Monday with Bob Fetrakis, who has announced his candidacy as an independent running for governor in Ohio. Let's go to Tom in Monterey, listening on KRXA 540. Hello, Tom. You're on the Tom Hartman Show with Peter B.
Peter B., glad to be on the air. You have a great show. Even though I'm a Republican, I do enjoy the idea. And I really enjoyed having George McGovern, who I actually voted for way back when.
I love George McGovern. It was great to talk with him. And Vance Hartke was the Indiana senator whose name I couldn't remember at the time. Tom, you got 1 minute. What do you want to say?
Well, I was just going to say that as a Republican, I'm really gratified to finally see Democrats coming out and saying what they think. You know, the Clinton days of triangulation, I hope, are over. And let's have truth in advertising. Republicans should exactly say what they think, and Democrats should, too. And let's have the clash of ideas and have our voters vote based on real ideas and not phony ones. So I'm glad to hear Howard Dean come out and say all the things he's saying, because I believe that's what he really believes.
All right, Tom. Well, I'm very happy to hear you say that. And Ken Melman is on the other line. He wants to cancel your membership in the Republican National Party.
I don't think so. I think Ken Melman agrees with me, and he wants Democrats to say exactly what they really believe.
Because Republicans never do, and so that'll make for a great competition. Thanks for your call from the Monterey area, Tom. It's great to hear from you. Coming up next, we're going to talk with Lieutenant Paul Rykoff. He served in Iraq, and he came back and formed Operation Truth. We'll get his ideas on Jack Murtha and a few other things going on in the Iraqi theater. That's coming up next. Your calls, too, at 866-440-8466. I'm Peter B. Collins, sitting in for Tom Hartman today.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
Why shop at Borders?
calling for a rapid and radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded. Here's Tom Hartman.
Tom Hartman is off today, and I'm delighted to be sitting in the chair here. I am Peter B. Collins, speaking to you from San Francisco today. And Tom Hartman is away today and Monday. He asked me to sit in both days. I'm delighted and honored. And lots of callers are on the line. We'll get to you shortly at 866-440-TOM. That's 866-440-8466. You can also log into the chat room at tomhartman.com. And lots of activity there, plenty of people in there, and some good comments. We'll refer to some in just a couple of minutes here. We're joined now by Lieutenant Paul Rykoff. He is the founder of OperationTruth.org. He served in Iraq in the Army, and we've spoken with him in the past on many occasions. He's a man I have a great deal of respect for. Lieutenant, welcome to the Tom Hartman Show today. It's Peter B.
Thank you very much, Peter B. Great to talk to you. Always a pleasure.
There's so many things going on. I'd like to lead with the what I call the Ricepalooza torture tour of Europe, as the Secretary of State has been going from country to country, stating what most people find incredulous, that the United States does not torture, does not condone torture, does not render captives to other countries for the purpose of torture, does not transit them through European airspace or airports. And this flies in the face of factual information that pops up on almost a daily basis. And today, the lead story in the New York Times is a reference to the interrogation of Ibn al-Sheikh al-Libi. And he was sent to Egypt. He says he was tortured, and he coughed up a story which wasn't true. The story that the United States wanted to hear so badly, that there really was a connection between 9/11 and Saddam Hussein. What is your take on Condoleezza Rice's tortured arguments about torture?
Well, they're torturing my sensibilities at this point, Peter. I mean, I think people, first of all, need to understand that there are many levels to our military and political involvement in Iraq and around the globe. And what these types of operations reveal is that there are not necessarily specialists or sergeants from the Nebraska National Guard who are involved with dealing with Iraqis and other foreign fighters or suspects or whatever we're calling them this week. So, you know, there is a wide range between what happened in Abu Ghraib and extradition and what could have happened or could be happening in these black bases around Europe. So I think that that's an important distinction we need to make. But the primary problem is this. They're not saying that the U.S. doesn't torture. And they need to. John McCain has led the fight with the McCain anti-torture amendment, and he should know. He was a POW for 5 years in Vietnam. We all know his personal story. And there are a number of primary reasons why that this whole idea that torture is even marginally acceptable is stupid. And primarily, you know, the first one being it's morally wrong. Then it puts our troops at greater risk. It doesn't work, and it also really damages our view around the world as Americans as we try to win people's hearts and minds. So by any metric, no matter how you cut it, torture is wrong, torture is stupid, and torture is un-American.
Paul Rykoff, this is a challenge, but to the extent that you can get into Dick Cheney's head, what the hell is he thinking that by publicly advocating for an exception to the McCain Amendment for the CIA, that somehow is going to, A, produce usable intelligence, or, B, advance the interests of the United States and preserve, to the extent possible, the safety of our people if they are held captive?
Well, Vice President Dick Cheney has never been terribly in touch with what's going on the ground in Iraq. I think that's been a constant. And by continuing to promote this idea that we need provisions to allow for the exceptional circumstances where torture can be conducted, I think also illustrates how out of touch he is with the battlefield in Iraq. I served as an infantry platoon leader in Baghdad. I kicked in doors. I detained people. We shot people. And what I can tell you is this. They want to believe that Americans are good people. They want to believe that Americans are there to help them. But when they see Abu Ghraib and our vice president and our secretary of state are saying that they can't outlaw torture, we're sending mixed messages. And for that young sergeant, that young lieutenant on the ground right now who's in Ramadi, who's in Baghdad, it makes his job tougher. No matter how you feel about this war, those guys are going to be there tomorrow. And by not condemning torture, we're making their lives more difficult. And that's what Dick Cheney needs to understand.
One of the questions posed in the chat room at tomhartman.com right now is whether Condoleezza Rice is skirting the truth and that we are outsourcing, either through third parties like Egypt or other countries where we render these detainees, or through the use of contractors, so that, you know, we're telling this carefully concocted story that the United States government and our military don't participate in torture. But is there wiggle room, or do you see evasiveness in Rice's comments?
Absolutely. I think she's definitely parsing her language, and she runs every speech by the lawyer before she gives it, I'm sure. Let me just break it down from the ground truth perspective. When I was in Baghdad and we detained someone who was suspected of running weapons or blowing up an American convoy or whatever, we arrested them, we detained them, and we processed them up to higher. So that meant they went up from my platoon to brigade or division, and they may have ended up at a place like Abu Ghraib. Beyond that, we have no idea as soldiers where they go. I mean, they could go to Egypt, they could go to Syria. I have no idea where they end up. And that's why this is really such a cloudy subject for discussion. Rice knows a whole lot more about where these guys end up than the people on the ground do. But I think the fact that she's being elusive about the language is an indication that they want wiggle room. And I don't know where they what they intend to do with it, because, you know, people like McCain are telling them not only is it wrong, not only does it send a horrible message, but it doesn't work. Abusive interrogations produce nothing but unreliable and inaccurate information. I mean, an interrogator will tell you anything to make the pain stop. It doesn't matter if it's true or not. And that's something McCain and anyone else who's dealt with torture understands better than anyone.
Well, Paul, I interviewed a gentleman the other day, Philip Butler, who served 8 years as a POW in the Hanoi Hilton. He got there before McCain, and he got to know McCain actually at the Naval Academy, and then they reconnected in Hanoi. And what Phil Butler told me, and I'll just summarize it briefly, is that after many rounds of torture, he finally wrote out a confession. And the confession stated that he acknowledged that he had been ordered to bomb North Vietnam and kill women and children. And he then signed it and said, the orders were given by our commander, Dick Tracy.
Right.
So he basically, you know, told us all of the things they did to him, and they were cruel and brutal and humiliating, and he didn't crack. And he did serve up phony information, just like Al Libby did.
Right, right. Well, the old adage when you go through military training is that, you know, everybody will bend. That you have to bend in order to survive torture or this type of horrible circumstance. But the question is, how far do you bend without breaking? And anybody who's been tortured does bend to some extent. That's part of the training when they send you through survival, evasion, and resistance training is to figure out what to give them without giving them anything usable. You know, the Dick Tracy example is fantastic, or saying that your commander is Mickey Mouse, whatever it is, the stories I've heard before. But what it does show you is that it doesn't work, and that's why our group, you know, we have the largest Iraq and Afghanistan veterans group in the country, and we're aligned with the American Progress Action Fund on a campaign that's running TV ads. It's an online campaign to really make sure that America supports the McCain anti-torture amendment. People can find out more about it if they go to tortureisnotus.org, tortureisnotus.org. You can find out more information. You can get involved. This is a serious issue, and it not only affects our national security interests in Iraq, but around the world.
So visit Paul's website at optruth.org. Paul Rykoff is with us from Operation Truth. Again, optruth.org is their website. Paul, what do you make of the recent speeches by the president trying to put some spin on the strategy in Iraq? He's used that word victory to the point that it's meaningless, and you know, it's very clear that they are trying to win this on a PR basis and maintain support of at least some of the American people. Is it working?
I don't think it is. I mean, the polling numbers will tell you that it's not. I mean, the approval ratings of his conduct of the war, Bush's conduct of the war, continue to be very, very low. And it's really become a game of words at this point. We're getting out of Iraq. Everybody knows that, from Bush down to Murtha. The question is when. And I think that's the real struggle we're looking at right now. And I think one thing I want to say is that it's kind of a false metric to assume that our only options are to stay the course or bring them home now. We've kind of gotten into this polarized argument where you either have to agree with George Bush or agree with Cindy Sheehan. There are alternatives in between and a responsible way to withdraw from Iraq. And at the end of the day, you know, one man's victory strategy is another guy's withdrawal plan. A lot of it's just semantics. Whether it's Murtha or Bush, they're both thinking about ways to get out at this point. So I think
you're right. And Paul, yeah. In the last few days, the president has said, you know, he's holding the course, we're staying the course, all that stuff. And Rumsfeld went on TV last night, A, denying that he's retiring, and B, saying that we're drawing down troops. Right. And when he was finally pressed, he said, yeah, we're going to draw them down to the level where they were in September.
Right. What they're doing, Peter, is they're playing Enron games with the numbers. They raise the troop levels for the election, and then they're going to lower them afterward. And the American public's way too focused on troop numbers. It's a false metric to evaluate how we're doing in Iraq, and so is the number of enemy killed in action. You've got to get to the baseline, most important issue, which is security. Are Iraqis safe? And until they are, we're going to be in some serious trouble over there.
What do you think of Congressman Murtha's outspokenness recently?
I think it's critical. It's breaking the seal, and it's showing people that you can be a patriot and you can question the policy, and it doesn't mean you're undermining the troops. He knows what he's talking about, and I think he's a critical voice, and I have tremendous respect for him.
Thank you very much, Lieutenant Paul Rykov. Visit the website, tortureisnotus.com. I'm Peter B. Collins. We'll continue on the Tom Hartman Show.
Bringing democracy to the United States of America, here's Tom Hartman.
Peter B. in for Tom Hartman today. Are you ready for climate change?
Well, there's a little something that's been freaking me. I read it in the news, I seen it on TV. It haunts me in the night and creeps me in the morning. A spooky little thing called global warming. It seems our indispensable amenities, like hairspray, air conditioners, and SUVs, are causing big emissions, all of which are forming a spooky little thing called global warming. Fluorofluorocarbon strip away ozone. We can't seem to leave the rainforest alone. Our temperatures are rising and they've now deduced the vampires of progress have come on to rule.
Yes, the vampires of progress are busy in Montreal this week.
A fiber in my diet and a blood pressure test. But this one is a doozy which required forewarning. A spooky little thing called global warming. Well, baby, you know what I lay. But honey, your Hummer is Mother Nature's bummer. Solar is sexy, carpool is cool. Only a ghoul digs fossil fuel. Prepare for damning droughts and hellish hurricanes. Record-breaking heat waves and torrential rains. The gods are getting peevish and they're crying foul. The werewolves of progress are starting to howl. Now people follow me, this planet can be saved. I'm moving from my condo back into a cave. Cause natural disaster's gonna keep on swarming from that spooky little thing called global warming. Watch what you drive, watch what you do. Cause global warming is gonna get you.
That's my old pal Dr. Elmo, the guy who first soiled Christmas with the worldwide hit Grandma Got Run Over by a Reindeer, and now he's busy doing it to Halloween, and that's a tune from his Halloween collection released this year called Dr. Elmo Sings the Boos, B-O-O-S. And that tune about global warming sets us up for the conference in Montreal, where the United States is once again missing in action. But our name comes up in every other speech, including a blistering set of comments by the Prime Minister of Canada in the keynote address of this United Nations Conference on Climate Change underway in Montreal these days. But we're too busy, you know, fighting the battle over Christmas, making sure that the energy extractors that Elmo calls the vampires of progress can continue to extract oil from the earth and record profits from American consumers. If you'd like to talk with us, I've got lines available here on the Tom Hartman Show at 866-440-TOM. That's 866-440-8466. Radkin in Allberg, Vermont. You're next here on the Tom Hartman Show. Hi, it's Peter B.
Good morning. Afternoon, Peter. Delightful listening to you. Your original question back with should Bush be impeached,
mm-hmm.
It was delightful. The audience's response to that, I think it needs to go further than that. I think they need to be not imprisoned, but have to do community service for the rest of their lives. And also their coffers must be totally depleted. And that's not only this whole cabal, this illegitimate regime in Washington that's fomented another unnecessary war around the world with this depleted uranium. I'm sorry I wasn't able to get your lieutenant there to corroborate the lethality of the depleted uranium, which is what they've been deployed in 29 countries around the world.
And I'm glad you brought that up. I think it's the most obscene thing that we have done in Iraq. Consider, and this is beyond irony, that we argued that because of the imminent threat posed by this dictator who had WMD, including biological and chemical weapons that he was ready to use on us, just 45 minutes, that's all it would take, according to British intelligence, to imagine that that was the ruse, the pretext, that we used to invade this country and destabilize a region, and in the process, we unnecessarily used these DU rounds, even more than we did in the original Desert Storm, extraction from Kuwait. And the legacy of these weapons will not only be visible on the landscape of Iraq for hundreds of years, but our own troops are suffering from exposure to DU, and their children are being born with certain types of birth defects that are exactly the same as many Iraqi babies being born today. And this is a legacy that currently is denied by the Pentagon. And when our troops seek health care to deal with their exposure to depleted uranium and its aftermath, they're basically told, oh, take two aspirin. You're dreaming that up.
You're absolutely right, Peter. It is blasphemous to the miracle of life, what we've promulgated around the world. But we need to make all those who have profited from this war, the military-industrial complex that Eisenhower warned us about, the pharmaceuticals coming up with these contaminated vaccines that the Gulf War I suffered from. And in fact, didn't they come down with these chronic fatigue even if they weren't deployed over there? It was traceable back to vaccines.
Some have. Yes.
Anyway, listen, there's so many issues, but this constitutional republic is being destroyed, and that is the scary part. Have you interviewed and talked about the Agenda 21 at all?
Oh, what is it?
Oh, well, I know you won't mind. American Exposé, that's spelled with a K for people to corroborate this information, he totally deals with Agenda 21, which explains this whole process of globalization for a one-world order, a one-world government.
Ratkin, I thank you for the tip. I'll check it out. I'm up against the clock here. Thanks for your call from the Green Mountain State today. More of your calls coming up in just a moment on the Tom Hartman Show. 866-440-TOM.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
I'm Peter B. Collins, enjoying Tom Hartman's music collection today. I want it all, and I want it now. Gosh, that must be a catchphrase of the Republican majority. It's the Tom Hartman Show, and you're welcome to join us. Lines are available. In fact, I've got a few lines open, so get on the horn if you've been wanting to talk with us. The number to call, toll-free, 866-440-8466, 440-TOM, T-H-O-M. And I take calls from any place in America, any viewpoint, any subject. It's all fair game, and you can call me. I would be delighted to talk with you. Joining us now for a few minutes is Melanie Sloan. She's Executive Director of Citizens for Responsibility and Ethics in Washington. Her organization, in my view, was instrumental in the guilty plea last week of Randy Duke Cunningham, the disgraced Top Gun who resigned from Congress after admitting he accepted $2.4 million in bribes. And these stories continue as investigations are underway on other fronts. And Melanie Sloan, you are calling for a real active role from the House Ethics Committee, given that Congressman Bob Ney from Ohio is likely to be indicted next.
That's right. Peter, we've been calling for the Ethics Committee to be more active for quite some time now, because they do have a constitutional obligation to police themselves over in the House of Representatives, and they've been failing to do that. But now, as we've been calling for the investigation of Ney for months, and today the Washington Post reported that prosecutors have told Ney that they are preparing a possible bribery indictment against him, and that is in part because one of Abramoff's close associates, Adam Kadan, and Abramoff and Adam Kadan had purchased the Sun Cruise gambling ships together down in Florida and had since been indicted together for bank fraud. Well, Mr. Kadan has now said that he's cooperating, and part of his cooperation is going to be against Bob Ney. So here we have now another member of Congress soon to be indicted, following closely on the heels of Duke Cunningham, who was also indicted and convicted of bribery. And we have the House Ethics Committee still doing nothing. And the question is, what is it going to take? What does a congressman have to do before the House Ethics Committee believes it needs to investigate?
Only just to clarify the record here, over the, about 9 months that Randy Duke Cunningham was a suspect and the investigation was going forward, this originated after a San Diego newspaper disclosed the remarkable profit he made on the sale of his house to Mitchell Wade, the lobbyist who presumably will be indicted in a forthcoming action. But Duke Cunningham's issues never came before the Ethics Committee in any way, shape, or form, did they?
No, it never did, and we were outraged about that. And because as soon as we heard about the purchase of the house, the sale of his house for $700,000 more than it was worth to Mitchell Wade, we immediately said, okay, House Ethics Committee, this is something you should be investigating. But it's important for people to know that outside groups like mine can't file complaints with the House Ethics Committee. Only members of Congress can file. So we prepared a complaint against Duke Cunningham to, you know, save members the trouble of putting it together themselves, and then we said, just forward it, forward our complaint to the Ethics Committee and force them to look into it. But they refused, and in fact, you never saw any member of Congress, whether Republican or Democrat, even speaking about Duke Cunningham until after he pled guilty. So no one wanted to even criticize the man until, or even say there should be an investigation until he pled guilty.
Given the way it has been inoperative, and this is a bipartisan problem, it's not simply something we can lay entirely at the feet of the Republican majority, I'm surprised that some budget cutter in the House hasn't proposed completely eliminating the Ethics Committee as a way to save money and fund the tax cuts for the wealthy.
You know, in my view, truly, Peter, they might as well do that, because the House Ethics Committee doesn't do anything at all right now. It just sits there, and it is a completely useless committee, and I think by having it there, it gives people the impression, perhaps, that the House does care about ethics and takes it seriously, when, in fact, the truth of the matter is they just couldn't be less interested. And you're right, it's the issue crosses party lines. You know, the Democrats could be filing ethics complaints. You know, nothing is stopping any member of Congress from filing an ethics complaint against Bob Ney, and Crew has prepared one, and it's, you know, sitting on our website ready to go, and you still don't see a member filing it.
And I'm scratching my bald little head here, Melanie. I know Nancy Pelosi. I've known her for many years. In full disclosure, I worked on a campaign for her in 1996, and at that time, she was serving on the Ethics Committee. She was part of the panel that brought the ethics charges up against Newt Gingrich. And so I'm really puzzled why she has not used the Ethics Committee as a way to put attention on and investigate these alleged misdeeds, particularly of her political opponents.
Well, you know, the reason is because in 1998, quite a long time ago now, the two parties made a truce, a pact, under which neither party would file any ethics complaints against members of the other party. And largely that's held. Last year, former Representative Chris Bell filed an ethics complaint against Tom DeLay, but he did that against the wishes of Nancy Pelosi when he did that. And there have been one or two other complaints filed, but for the most part, the truce has stayed, and even when members have expressed interest in filing complaints, they've been told by the House leadership not to do it.
Just amazing. Melanie, I want to turn to just one other issue before I let you go, and I appreciate your joining us at the last minute on the show today. I got a report that the Nashville Tennessean has been looking further into the actions of Bill Frist, and in articles published this week, they support the notion that he has repeatedly sponsored and supported bills that benefit HCA Incorporated, and that is the Nashville-based hospital company that his family wealth came from and that he winked and nodded and said was in a blind trust that was not very blind. And the Tennessean reports they found a number of examples, such as July 2005, a bill Frist introduced to help insure the uninsured and limit jury awards. Other bills include curbing development of physician-owned specialty hospitals, and there seems to be quite a laundry list here. Bill Frist, his problems have been pushed back off the front pages by delay, by the Abramoff scandal, by the Cunningham guilty plea. What's the status there? Do you think that this series of articles brings new information that further questions the ethics of the Senate's majority leader?
Well, that's an interesting question. Yes, I think it further questions the ethics of the Senate Majority Leader, but the real problem that this brings up is what the Senate ethics rules allow. According to Senate ethics rules, Bill Frist hasn't done a thing wrong because the conflict of interest laws in both the Senate and the House allow a member to repeatedly vote on things that affect his financial interest or push legislation that affects his financial interest unless they are pushing something that affects absolutely only their own financial interest. Say Mr. Frist had pushed legislation that helped only one hospital, only HCA, to the exclusion of all others. Maybe then the ethics committee would think he had a problem, but as long as there is a class of hospitals, however small it might be, that's helped, according to the ethics rules, that's not a problem. So the real problem here is what the ethics rules allow.
And what is the status of the original investigation into insider trading and the lack of blindness in his blind trust?
Right. Well, that's something that we at Citizens for Responsibility and Ethics in Washington filed a complaint against Bill Frist for with the Senate Ethics Committee, where outsiders can file complaints. We said that there seems to be an insider trading problem, and that merited an investigation. And the Southern District of New York, U.S. Attorney's Office, and the Securities and Exchange Commission are both investigating that. But once again, we have a dormant Ethics Committee. The Senate Ethics Committee has said very specifically, the chairman, George Voinovich, said that they weren't going to be investigating Bill Frist, that he didn't think Bill Frist had done anything wrong. And that's the chairman of the Ethics Committee speaking before there was even any kind of investigation at all, just clearing Bill Frist. And you know, it's a shame. The only thing we can say here is at least Bill Frist is, you know, not running for Senate anymore, and soon he'll be out of our hair.
Gosh, that must have come from the same scriptwriter who provided Bush with the line that Karl Rove had nothing to do with the leak of Joe Wilson's wife's name and CIA identity.
Well, they do all seem to be on the same script these days.
They certainly do. Thank you for your hard work, and keep us posted on these myriad investigations as they develop.
I will do. Thanks for having me.
Melanie Sloan, visit their website, citizensforethics.org. The organization is CREW, Citizens for Responsibility and Ethics in Washington. Back to your calls now. Ed in Grand Rapids, join us here on the Tom Hartman program. Hello, Ed. Do we have you? We're trying to get Ed on the line in Grand Rapids. There we go. Hi, Ed.
How are you doing?
I'm doing great today. Nice to talk with you.
Yes. You mentioned about these people with the white flag.
Well, the Drudge Report indicates today that Republican operators are preparing some television commercials that will use a white flag interspersed with images of Howard Dean, Jack Murtha, and other Democrats who have called for us to end the mess in Iraq.
Well, my suggestion is that I think Charlie Rangel, you know, the Black Caucus, mentioned it. Bring back the draft. Somebody, get Murtha or somebody that's believes in America, that's on the Democratic side, and I'm lost for words and I'm nervous. Bring back the draft, and we'll stop stuff like that. We're all Americans first.
I understand, but why would the draft end the divisive political rhetoric from the Republicans?
Well, with this white flag here, okay, we're going to show them. We're all willing to join. I am. I've never been in there. But I've got a brother that served in Vietnam, and he's had people. He's even having trouble right now with Agent Orange, you know, and he's having difficulties getting benefits and stuff like that. But I'm just saying we the Democrats has got to come back to the roots and say, you know, we are just Americans as anybody else.
Well, Ed, I understand your argument, and I understand Charlie Rangel's rationale for the draft. My focus here is just on the more immediate picture. that if Republicans try to paint Democrats as cowards, they must stand up and courageously reject that kind of demagoguery, because that's what it is, and we cannot permit it to occur here. More of your calls in a moment, 866-440-TOM. I'm Peter B. Collins on the Tom Hartman Show.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Will you come down from your ivory tower?
Tom Hartman has the day off. I'm Peter B. Collins, originating from San Francisco here on the left coast, and we're taking your calls. Let's hop the bay to the People's Republic of Berkeley. Lois is on the line. Hello, Lois.
Hello.
Welcome to the Tom Hartman Show.
Oh, hello. I love listening to Tom Hartman. He's made my day much better.
Yeah, he's terrific.
Years.
I listen every day myself.
He's a good man. But what I wanted to talk about an unpleasant thing, which I feel torture is. And I also wanted to say that I think it does protect our own people if we do not torture people, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
But also, I hope it never happens, but if I were ever tortured, I might talk, but I might not say anything that was true. I would mm-hmm. just probably try and end being hurting.
Well, I've referenced the POW, the Vietnam-era POW, Philip Butler, who was on my local program the other day. And one of the things that he told me was that they got tremendous strength under duress at the Hanoi Hilton from the knowledge that the United States did not commit these type of atrocious acts on Viet Cong captives.
Mm.
And that is no longer available to Americans who might fall into the hands of enemies.
Yes.
Because our image is damaged, and it's going to take a long time to repair it. And Condoleezza Rice is what I call the Rice-a-palooza torture tour of Europe, is doing nothing to change that. If anything, people are saying, you're telling us more lies? You're denying the obvious?
But she said the United States does not. I'm going to be optimistic and think that it means that we won't anymore, even though we once did.
Well, I think it means we're hoping not to get caught anymore.
Of course.
Lois, thanks a lot for the call today. Good to have you listening. And speaking of California, as you probably know, we have an Austrian-born action movie star playing our governor, and he took a pounding at the polls. Every one of the initiatives that he put on the ballot on November 8th was resoundingly defeated by the people of California, or as he says, California. And here is a special Christmas greeting from the Gruppenführer.
'Twas the night before Christmas, and all through Sacramento, I was doing such a good job that I looked presidential. The stockings were hung by the chimney with care, but we still $9 billion over budget, so there's not going to be anything in there. The girly men politicians were snug in their beds, while visions of tax dollars danced in their heads. And Maria in her warm-ups and I in my suit had just settled in to work on her glutes. Then out on the lawn, there arose such a clatter. I sprang from my bench to see, you know, what it was that was making all of the noise. Away to the window, I flew like the Terminator. Maybe I do a version of this poem in German later. And what to my wandering eyes should appear but a little red sleigh and a tiny reindeer. With a little old driver so lively and quick, I knew right away that it must be Saint Nick. Or as we call him in Austria, Nikolaus. He jumped out of the sleigh, grabbed a big bright red sack, and then said to his reindeer, "Stay here, I'll be back." His eyes had a twinkle, his beard like old rope, his cheeks were as red as the women I groped. He spoke not a word but went straight to the tree, and as he laid out the toys, something occurred to me. Santa's not from the U.S. This is all out of order. He comes down from the North Pole and sneaks across the border. So I grabbed him by the neck. He screamed, "Let me go!" I threw open the door and hurled him out on the snow. And he heard me exclaim, as to his sleigh he was diving. You're in this country illegally. You're not supposed to be driving.
That's our Christmas message from his Arnoldness. Back to the phones we go. Nan in Monterey, you're on the Tom Hartman program. Hello, Nan.
Hi.
Listening to KRXA 540, I hope.
Yes, I am. Yeah. Hi.
Uh-huh. What's on your mind?
I'm calling because somebody had called a little earlier and was talking about depleted uranium and how Bush, you know, has been using this in Iraq.
Mm-hmm.
And I wanted to bring up that Clinton had also used depleted uranium munitions to get rid of the dictator in Serbia, Slobodan Milosevic.
I do believe you're right. I think that they did use DU rounds in the air war over Yugoslavia, and I deplore that.
Yeah, and the reason that, you know, I call is because a lot of people don't know on account of, well, it's just it's something that's being kept quiet.
Well, but you know what, Nan? I don't think it's terribly relevant to the issue because, you know, Clinton didn't go into Serbia to relieve Milosevic of weapons of mass destruction. And that's the point I was making about the way Bush did it. Thanks a lot for your call. I want to squeeze in Roy from Rio Rancho, New Mexico. Hello, Roy. You're on the Tom Hartman program.
Hey, Peter B. Isn't it amazing how it's all Clinton's fault? That's
I knew it had to come up.
What piece of crap is that? it's just like this white flag ad that's getting ready to run. I've seen the video. What a piece of crap. It is slime boat liars.
Mm-hmm.
And the people who are listening to this show need to know about it, need to be ready. They need to have the quote that Bush made a year or two ago about, we can't win this war.
Roy, great ending for the program. Thanks for your call from New Mexico today.
Get it.
And I want to thank everybody who called the program or joined us on the line today. Thanks for all you folks in the chat room. I'm Peter B. Collins, sitting in for Tom Hartman, and I'll be back Monday here on the Tom Hartman program. Himself, Tom, returns on Tuesday. I hope you have a great weekend and remain vigilant.
Been listening to the Tom Hartman program? Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.